Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. In this episode, I'm joined by Laura and Stephen O'Reilly as they share the journey that they've been on since their 2-year-old son Jude was diagnosed with leukemia just a few months ago, in June 2023. Unlike many episodes with families who speak about this journey in the past, Jude's diagnosis and the impact of this devastating news is still very hard to comprehend. We talk about the initial signs and symptoms to the eventual diagnosis, how much their world, their priorities and their perspectives on life have changed. We talk about the moments of despair and the moments that lifted them up and gave them immeasurable hope. Jude has been through a lot, but he is on track and his cancer is highly treatable. But this has been an unimaginable year for this family, who now look forward to Jude becoming a big brother, maintenance and one day ringing that bell. Laura and Stephen, thank you so much for joining me this evening on Gold Ribbon Conversations. When we were talking just before we started, I think you said something really powerful that really stood to me, that what you hope for this podcast is that it is something that somebody who is those few months behind you can listen to and can feel connected and supported and understand. Because really, the whole point of Childhood Cancer Ireland being started by parents who have walked this path is to connect parents, because they know that the greatest source of support is actually the people who've been there and have done this. And of course, there is the medical teams, but really there is nothing like talking to people who have been in their shoes. So thank you for agreeing to do this and for seeing that for what it is.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
This is the first time I have had groups on together and kind of mother and child on together and siblings on together, but I've actually never had a couple on together. And I'm not sure why, now that it's happening. I'm like, why is that? I think it's really important, because often I have episodes just with a dad, or I have episodes just with a mom. But I'm really glad actually that this is happening together.
Well, we're in it together, so.
Yeah, because I know, like, I might have felt things differently, and I found some parts tougher, and Laura might have found some parts tougher, and I know we're in it together, but it probably affected us in different ways and different challenges.
This is probably maybe March, April, when we first kind of thought something might be wrong. Jude just stopped eating as well as he was and lost a bit of weight, and his behavior, I suppose, changed. Just constantly crying and wanted to be carried and didn't want to walk, didn't want to go on the pram. What else, really?
He just started to whinge a lot. I was always whinging, and this was a child who, you couldn't put him into a buggy. Like, it was a two-man job to actually pin him down, hold him in. He would fight, kick and scream to get out, and then he'd eventually give up. And that changed to, he kept asking for the buggy, asking to be carried. we had to hide food. We couldn't let any food near his eye level because he'd have it eaten. And then it went to just not eating at all.
Everything we ate was shared, basically. So like, if you wanted to have a cup of tea, he wanted tea as well, even though obviously he doesn't drink tea at that age. But anyone that I spoke to, they were like, oh, this is normal, terrible twos. And, you know, so brought him to the GP, and the GP said if he, well, actually the GP couldn't examine him.
Yeah, he had an absolute meltdown in the GP's office, like uncontrollable. This was about 2 weeks before he brought him in. She couldn't do a thing. He was just screaming uncontrollably, wanted to get out, just hated it. And she said, look, if nothing improves in 2 weeks, bring him back or bring him to Crumlin.
So I kind of finished up in school then the end of May, and I was with Jude for a week by myself at home. And every day that went by, I just kind of thought to myself, something is not right here. Just not eating. And I remember the Thursday, I sent Stephen a message, a picture of Jude eating his lunch. And I said, he's after eating his full lunch that I made, so happy. But then I thought about it a few hours later and said, that's not really normal that I'd send you a message that says Jude ate his lunch today.
I think the big thing was the Friday before we brought him in. Like, our estate is full of young kids, and we were outside, and I was blowing bubbles, and there was two little lads next door who were younger than him, and they were absolutely flying around the place chasing bubbles, and he was just stood there and couldn't move. And he was translucent. He was so pale, he was so white, and he couldn't move. And
that's obviously the reason why he asked to get into pram and to be carried around, because his bone marrow was sore, so he didn't want to, he couldn't support his body weight. And I even remember calling into school to say, I won't actually be in this morning because Jude is so upset, I can't even get him dressed. That's the day that we kind of brought him into the GP, I guess. And she said, I think you should go to Crumlin in 2 weeks' time if things don't improve. And everything just went completely downhill. So,
yeah, well, was that Friday night we said, no, tomorrow morning, we're getting up and we're going to Crumlin. And
we stopped off for breakfast for the last bit of normality. I think we both had a feeling that something seriously was wrong and that our lives were going to change somewhat. But I don't think I expected it to be what it was. And as intense of a summer that it was, because I was under the illusion when they told us his diagnosis that we were still going on holidays for 2 weeks in July. And that was one of the first questions I asked. I said, can we still go on holiday in July? And they kind of, I don't know if they laughed or what, but they just said, no way, you'll have to cancel that now, unfortunately.
Early on in Crumlin, we knew.
When they asked us, did we know what hemoglobin was?
We knew we were in big trouble.
I straight away, I flagged it because my mom died of cancer, breast cancer, 10 years ago now. So I had the terminology kind of already in the back of my mind. And when they used the terms like malignant, and they wanted to get a chest x-ray, and this was kind of totally irrelevant to his legs being sore or him being weak and not eating. So I straight away flagged it as lymph nodes. And of course I was on Google straight away and everything was coming up as leukemia. But I kind of thought to myself, do you know what? Google is Google. It's always going to tell you the bad news or the worst. And then, of course, then that evening, we didn't know. We weren't told that day, but we had a feeling.
Yeah, you know when you're in A&E and you get special treatment and there's a consultant coming down to you within 2 hours and you're in your own private room,
mm-hmm.
and they said, we'll do a blood test. And I said, will we go home? And they said, no, hang on.
You might be staying a night.
All the signs were there.
I Google symptoms.
And then the person that came to see us, Laura, Googled her name and
came up oncology.
Yeah, oncology. So like the right was on the wall there and then. And we were sent down to St. Michael's ward, which is beside the kids' cancer ward. And that was
this Saturday night?
That was grim.
Yeah.
We were put into like a shared room with four kids and he was attached to platelets.
He didn't want to get a cannula in because it was so sore. Then they eventually got it in. So
we got moved down to a private room. It was something like Harry Potter's room under the stairs. Like there was room for the door to open. Had him in there. 4 o'clock, the lights come on, walk in, pulled out the cannula, put in a new one, platelets off, blood transfusion. You know, he goes back asleep after screaming, then up again at 8 o'clock, blood transfusion taken off, new cannula in his left arm, and into his forearm.
Into his feet and everything.
Yeah, he didn't know. He cannulas in his feet, his wrists, and into like his elbow.
And in fairness, he was actually in good form. He was in flying form, but then he was flat as well from just exhaustion. And then on the Sunday, Cormac came into us and said, possible.
Yeah, like they kept saying there's a small chance it could be a viral thing, but the consultant, and he was just lurking around the room waiting for us to kind of be in our own. And my parents had come up in the meantime. And
lucky they were there. Yeah, they had Jude outside in the play area.
And he just sat us down and
it was the fact really, and that somebody would come in and chat to us the next day and, you know, expect this, and this is the way it is going to be. So
I didn't hear where he just said your child has acute lymphatic lymphoma.
Yeah,
and that was it. I didn't hear another word he said. I just kept saying, yeah, okay, that's grand, thank you.
He was just apologizing, and I didn't really know what else to say, and he just said that, like, they have to wait for the hematology team to come around the next day, and, you know, you'll meet your team and they'll introduce themselves. And the next day they did come around and, you know, told us the bad news, I guess. But what they did say that was positive, they just kept saying this is highly treatable, it's common, which gave us that hope, I suppose, that everything was going to be okay towards the end. Or this is when I asked about, can we go on this holiday in 5 weeks' time? And I suppose they were pretty positive that things were going to
I didn't hear that.
Stephen just blacked out. I just wanted all the information there and then on the page in front of me.
I had a shutdown because I had
Sunday, you shut
down. I had done grinds with kids who had leukemia before, and I knew, I was like, this is 5 years. I said, this is 5 years if we're lucky. Like, the best we can hope for is to be in here for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was planning, like I said, Laura was pregnant. I said, our child is going to grow up in hospital.
Yeah. It was 10 weeks at that stage. And they asked, like, do you have any other children? And we were just kind of thinking, yeah, we do. So
you had 10 weeks of, not even, because in those 10 weeks, you were still concerned and watching his decline. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a very small window of, like, this is good news, this is excitement, this is the little sibling that we hope for, really, you know, by the time you found out a kind of week 4 or 5 to then see his decline and then to be in this position.
And that was it. That was what, 11th of June?
It's this Sunday.
Sunday, 11th of June, yeah.
So we, after about an hour or so, we took time out and just went and found somewhere local to go and get a cup of coffee and digest the information that we'd just been told.
We went down to the place and we actually met a friend of mine there. And
bumped into him by chance.
He was just there and I couldn't eat. I got a bowl of porridge and tears falling into it. And of course, Laura, 10 weeks pregnant, finished off her breakfast and then at mine. I'd say people looking at us probably thought she wants a divorce or something, because she was eating and I was just couldn't talk, head in my hands.
I just remember there was a dog there sitting beside us and I was just petting the dog and asking the people questions about the dog. But then when they asked me a question about, do you have a dog? I just couldn't stop crying and the conversation just ended and I just kept petting their dog just for like a source of comfort, I guess. We hadn't really eaten much that day anyway, so like it was probably good to.
I didn't eat. I couldn't eat for another day or two after that. Just couldn't.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And then I don't know. I suppose meeting Stephen's friend was kind of, I wouldn't say a distraction, but like it was nice to see somebody outside of the situation that we had just been in. just even to say hello. Then at that stage, I had probably, I had checked one or two of my friends. One of my friends was away in Greece, and she rang me straight away, and I went inside to have a chat with her, and
Then that was it. Then just back into the hospital and
went home to pack and rang some people that really needed to know, I guess, I suppose, and made a quick decision actually that day as well. I had to decide where one of us was going to go back to work or whatever, because we knew after the discussion that we had with Cormac, he was just like, it's going to be a long process. So at that stage, I had decided potentially I won't go back next year, considering that I am pregnant as well. It impacts everybody, I think, in your life that's close enough to you. And obviously, your life outside of your family life, like your work life, friendships, everything, social life.
I'm glad that we're talking about this when you're both together, and to understand those different expressions, because on one hand, Stephen, you speak of like disassociating with it, like you had to just go inside and block out the world and block out feelings and block out as in like hunger, and you went inside yourself. But Laura, this, as you said, like you've seen cancer.
I had a feeling of what was ahead, and one of the questions we asked, and we already knew the answer to it, was, would you lose his hair? I actually can't really, some parts of those days that I just can't remember, but we were in for 10 or 11 nights. And during that time as well, Stephen's grandmother had passed away. So I suppose everybody was upset, and there's a lot going on, and Stephen's brother and sister live in Abu Dhabi, so they had to come home.
I don't know, those 10, 11 days, all I can recall is he had surgery.
Freddie was inserted.
He's got his Hickman line in. My grandmother died, and the dog came in on the last day. And that's like 11 days, that's all I can remember. It was just one big blur of trying to keep a 2-year-old on a bed, on a drip.
Play games.
Who was sick, who couldn't leave the room. You're just, every minute, you're just fighting for it, entertain him in some capacity. And like the walls be closing in on top of you. And while you're sitting there, you're just sitting there all day thinking of what's next, what's going to happen.
At that stage, you don't really discuss that with you, because obviously test results haven't come back and whatnot from surgery. So it's more so like a waiting game for those 10 days, really. Yeah. And it was, when can we go home? What day can we leave? They did tell us, but as that date approached, we were like, we'll be so lucky to get out. So lucky to get out. And then we eventually did. So
that was a big thing, getting home. Like, we'd try and get to day 11 and just get home. Because I think it was day 4 or 5, we might have gone home between us, and the house was empty and quiet. And
it was really sad. Like, it was just a shell.
Absolutely horrible. It was, because the dog wasn't there and the house was empty. I said, no.
Yeah, we have to get home soon. So when we did get home, I think, was Dobby here when we got home?
Yeah.
Dobby was here when we got home.
Then we got home and drove home, and we were buzzing, and we got to the door. Next thing we still realized that she still has cancer, and
we brought home so much medication, equipment, and everything, really. And then obviously the bags to unpack. It's like unpacking from a holiday, but like a nightmare of a holiday, really, I suppose. And then all of our neighbors had left balloons and gifts at the door for Jude, and a big welcome home sign for Jude. And it really was uplifting, I suppose, that people showed that they cared, and they have cared so much since. All of our neighbors have been so kind and generous. Even like the drop of a hat in an emergency, we're actually in Crumlin for a longer period today. Would somebody mind going and taking our dog out of the house and minding him for the rest of the day until we get home? Like, that's just one example of many things that they've done, I guess. But
yeah, those first 10 days were the worst. 11 days, there was, if you can do that, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. And I know from listening to your other podcast that people are spending a lot longer in hospital, and I don't know how they did it. because I think 11 nights was the most we spent.
It was long.
I felt every second. Every second I felt it. And he's the same. Jude absolutely hated it. Absolutely.
The fact that he couldn't go and play outside, actually, because he had the lumbar puncture. He had his first one during that time. He had his first chemotherapy. Everything was the first of everything. So he was weak. He was sore. He didn't understand what was going on. He was still very frail. Like he hadn't still digested food properly. He hadn't eaten. You know, Stephen's colleagues as well dropped in food and games and gifts for him, but like he had no interest in a lot of stuff. Like I'd say he was just so confused of why has this happened, but he obviously didn't have the vocabulary back then to be able to tell us. But I suppose after we got home, it was summertime and kind of everything kind of just stayed the same, but it was at home. All the medication, all the equipment, our utility room has just changed into kind of like a nurse's station at this point. For the foreseeable, so hopefully if, when we get to maintenance, and if we do in March or February, that we won't have all of this equipment everywhere, I suppose. I don't know how to explain it.
We're now into November, so yes. In those months since those first 11 days, mm-hmm. obviously treatment has continued, and I'm sure within that there are ups and downs in terms of his own well-being and energy. How have you seen him progress based on, if you remember that little boy that was standing on the road that couldn't play and run after the bubbles, how is he now from that kind of being able to be fun and be a child?
Yeah, I'd say we definitely lost him for a while on steroids. Side effects of it are just horrible.
He stared at things
in the middle of the day, like he just sat there, no interaction, no eye contact, wouldn't engage. He stopped walking and his hair was falling out. I think his body weight went up by about 15%, which is a huge increase in about 2 or 3 weeks.
I couldn't lift him, especially being pregnant as well. I was just...
Laura couldn't lift him, so I had to carry him up and down the stairs and get me up 3 or 4 times a night, mm-hmm. looking for like a full sandwich or something. And like, I was like, he's gone, that's it. That's the way he is now. And it wasn't until he met other parents in the ward and they said, oh yeah, he's on steroids. Don't worry. He'll come back to himself. And even when the dosage, it dropped by one... By 2 mil a day. And when it dropped by 2 mils, he laughed at the TV.
For the first time.
And then the next day, it dropped by 2 mils more.
And he smiled.
Started smiling and looking at us. And eventually, he came back to talking to us again. And
his vocabulary has actually expanded so much since.
He obviously heard what we were saying. He was listening to us. Because he learned words that we were speaking to him when he was just sitting there. And he obviously forgets it all, and I hope he does, because
it was actually very scary. I thought, like, will he ever come back from this trance that he's in? Like, it's like he was on a different planet. Like, I know people say that as a phrase so often, but like genuinely he had changed to a different person.
He wasn't there.
It was like Jude was there beforehand and then Jude just had gone. Like, it's so difficult to explain. I can't even describe it.
The thing is, we are very, very lucky in the fact that the treatment is working.
Every time I feel like, oh, we'll never get out of this, or like, it's just not going to happen, or I feel like we're having a long day. I just remember back to that first day when the consultant said to us, it's highly treatable. I just remember her saying that and like looking us dead on in the eye saying, it's highly treatable. No, it's high chance of survival, and you know a lot of kids get through this, so I always try to remind myself of that every time this happens, like that I have a long day or a bad day, but it could be a long week or a bad week. It really depends on Jude's mood. But as Stephen has said, that like he did have sometimes when we thought that he was just gone and just wasn't himself anymore. Since he's come back to himself a bit slightly, I suppose most of he's kind of back to his normal self, really. Like, he actually acts like a 2-year-old now. I've forgotten some days that he actually has been sick. Like, you just look at him visually and you see the NG tube in his nose and you see his hair is gone or his hair is patchy. So that's the reason why I think sometimes he's actually not sick, but you're brought back to reality then when you go back in.
And the tests, as you said, are showing positive impact of the treatment.
Yeah, there was a big, you have a protocol at a certain date, they test, and he had a big test at the end of August, I think it was, and they send it off just to see pretty much, I think it's MND it's called.
Yeah, the level of mercury in the bones.
And we were in on one of our overnight stays. I was actually in the middle of doing the training how to take blood. And team just walked in and said, we have his MRD results. And I just knew, I could see just in the background that all four of them were smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said, there's no trace.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I was devastated I wasn't there for that. But Stephen rang me and told me, and my initial reaction was, okay, so like this is all over, and no, we still have to continue on.
They said that there's no trace. And I was like, I knew what it said, but I had to turn to Jackie, who was beside me, and said, put it in simple terms, just say it again. So that was, I think that's the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Like there's no,
it's a good day.
There's no cancer in your child's body anymore. But it still means that he still has two plus more years left.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was a big turning point for us.
I think it's April 26th.
Yeah.
Well, that's hopefully our deadline, or what we hope to get to, that he will be fully ringing the bell in the ward.
I know that not everybody gets that. Not everybody gets that news. We follow all the child with cancer pages, and you see on Evian's pink tie when a candle goes up.
Very upsetting. You know? And you know, you kind of reflect on the last few months or the last few weeks, even like when he was in bad form or when he does be in good form, and you kind of think like some days you're just so lucky that your child is getting on with the treatment, even though it does make him pretty sick.
Yeah. Like I know obviously people look at us with pity and all that, and but we've gotten so many lucky breaks. We've gotten no more setbacks. At the start, they tested him and they said that the cancer hadn't spread to his spine or his brain. And like that was a massive win for us straight away.
But the maintenance phase, I suppose, every 4 weeks he gets vincristine, so we have to go into Crumlin for that. And then every 12th week he gets a lumbar puncture, so that would be chemotherapy injection into his spine. That does it go to his brain as well, I think? I know it goes into his spine anyway. It goes up his spinal cord, just to prevent it from going into his brain, as far as I know. But in July, actually, we got bad news. It was he was only 0.02 over the level of like the baseline level, so he went onto like an intermediate phase. So we're currently in delayed intensification. Yeah,
there's four risk levels. There's standard, intermediate, low, intermediate, high, and high risk, and he's intermediate low.
Yeah.
So he could have got standard risk. It would mean it would take 7 or 8 weeks off us, but apart from that, that's the only setback we've had.
I think we're 20 days behind schedule, but like that's understandable, and that's probably a lot less than what a lot of other people have had to deal with. I think a nurse commented today and said he's one of the few children that have got through cytarabine without a blood transfusion, which I was surprised to hear, because I just assumed that, you know, everything was, I wouldn't say, how do I even describe it? I presumed that those three blocks of cytarabine that we did have, I thought that he was going to be very sick. Now he was pukey, he was vomity, and he had all the side effects, but every blood, like we didn't have any setbacks. But when you're in that moment in time, you don't really think of the setbacks that you could actually have at times. But yeah, it's just, I suppose every day goes by, you remain positive and just hope for the best. And yeah, we're just hoping now for maintenance.
Will you light up our gold ribbon tree this Christmas? Please join us in remembering our loved ones who were taken too soon, or send a message of love and hope to families who are still fighting and survivors who are dealing with the long-term effects of treatment. Make a donation on our virtual tree at goldribbontree.ie and leave a donation if you wish. Our work at Childhood Cancer Ireland is only possible because of generous donations from people like you. You can help by sharing this podcast and by texting GOLD to 50300 and donating €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
I actually did an amazing episode last season with a woman from the UK who has studied this around, you know, how to support children through the treatment process and to understand that it is impacting their trust. And now a lot of it might be for when he's a little bit older in terms of how to kind of communicate before and during and after visits to hospital. But I found it really fascinating to listen to her because it was just yet again like another element, thankfully, of the work that people are doing to try and not just improve the treatments, but also improve the treatment process for children going through cancer so that they don't just come out of this well physically, but they can also come out of this well emotionally.
Psychologically, yeah, I think I actually did listen to that podcast. It was very, very good. I think psychologically, yes, about the whole stay in hospital. But when we go into the day ward, I suppose it's a little bit different. But when Jude stays overnight, he does get to bring Dobby in, and that's a huge break. And it's a good, like, solid hour and a half, 2 hours. It breaks up his day, breaks up our day. And I suppose his mood just lightens. I suppose so does ours as well, because you kind of feel, you forget where you are really for that time that our dog is there with us.
Which of course is thanks to Keane's Kennels.
Yes. So we've actually been so grateful for them, and Grania as well. She's been so accommodating for changing last minute plans again. Like, sorry, Grania, we can't actually bring Dobby in today. Can we do it tomorrow instead? And she just say yes. So I think, I suppose Keane's Kennels, Evelyn, who set it up to remember her son, she definitely knows the feeling of staying in on the overnight ward, and it is very different. And when you're staying in there overnight and when you're in the day ward, because the day ward you're in and you know, like, this is going to be over in a few hours, we'll be on the road home, and you know, we're not staying in overnight. But when you do stay in overnight, yeah, the days are very, very long, I suppose. So psychologically for Jude coming out the other end, it's not that we, I don't know, think he will forget this or think he will remember. Well, I'm not sure because he's so young.
I know there's kids in that ward from every age. There's like kids younger than Jude up to 16, and I know if you're a teenager, I know the challenges they face. You know, like going through puberty, starting secondary school, and then having all this as well. It's chemo and steroids and hair loss, and you know, your huge weight gain with steroids. Then no appetite. And then whereas I suppose parents can explain to them, we're going into the hospital today, whereas every time we brought Jude in, he thought it would, no matter what it was for, he just hated it.
End of the world.
Yeah. But the positive to that is I'm hoping that he will just forget all this.
And the play and music therapy as well was excellent when we were in there for the overnights. Like, the play therapist was often dropped down his favorite toy into his room if the playroom was occupied with another patient. And then the music therapist, she's visited a few times and sings Hey Jude to him, and he gets really excited with the musical instruments and anything that shakes and makes noise. And they've been fantastic in terms of trying to keep the mood alive and keep him happy.
So, I had another episode that has come to mind as we're talking, which was with Louise. Because of the situation that she was in with a toddler, but also a pregnancy, and how she wanted to almost control the timeline around that birth, coinciding with a time when treatment was kind of paused so that she didn't have to be in two places at once. How are you, approaching any birth is a range of emotions, and anxiety is always one of them. I imagine from listening to Louise's personal experience, it may be quite similar in that it is hard to kind of feel pregnant. It is hard to prepare for what should be the thing that you're most focused on.
That's very true. Like, I think at this stage, when I was pregnant on Jude, I had everything ready to go and everything.
You were doing nice thing. It was during COVID, but you know, you said, oh, for the next child, you'll have like a baby shower, that kind of stuff and all that. Like, that just wasn't on the table
it's
for
just
you.
It's just not on my priority list at the moment. Even getting the hospital bag ready, I kind of realized, oh, I'm 32 weeks now. I must get organized. Even like putting together baby's room. When I was pregnant on Jude, I had everything done by probably by week 25. Just probably part of my nature to be organized and everything. But yeah, it's been difficult to kind of focus on the future of having two children. I just can't imagine life right now with two people dependent on me. However, like, Jude is due in the week of my due date, so like, we can change around his timeline on his protocol. We have asked and we have discussed that, and I've discussed that with the hospital, the maternity hospital, so like, they're going to work together and we will make it work and everything should be fine. Treatment will still go on and maybe we'll get here safely, fingers crossed. So yeah, it is difficult to feel pregnant and to enjoy pregnant. I wouldn't say enjoy pregnancy, but like, enjoy the time of having Jude just as the three of us. We can't actually do anything really. Like, we can't go away for a night and like the three of us together because he can't swim. He can't, I suppose, a lot of things really. It would be difficult. It probably would be less relaxing than what it would have been if the three of us went away if he wasn't sick. So it has been.
Well, it's just been tough on you because the very start you were exhausted and it was a two-man job to mind him 24 hours a day with no rest.
A lot of responsibility then was put on you.
I had a terrible fear if I got sick or if I got hurt or if I got food poisoning, like, I don't know what would have happened then. And even now, like, I'm back in work, you know, Laura struggles to walk most times and then he's heavy, he's difficult, and even on days when he's in good form, he's great, but he's like a bold toddler again, and even that on its own is a challenge. But no, it's been tough on Laura.
It's been tough, but like, there's some days that he's fine and I really enjoy my company with Jude. So the two of us might go shopping and he loves that activity. He can't really play in like soft play. It's hard to bring him to the library because he likes to run, because he's energetic now.
There's nowhere to bring him because he's at risk of infection. So,
we
bring him to Dunstores to play. He goes in the trolley and runs around the place. Like, that's, or else the garden centre, that's as good as his play gets. Because of risk.
Even play dates are risky because obviously they're probably in creche or some sort of childcare.
And like an infection for us is in overnight, possibly isolation room.
Maybe a week.
You know.
Could be less or longer. I don't know.
Yeah. But like, we're just grateful because there was a stage there where in May, June, where we thought we said like, oh, we'll have two babies this time next year. And we thought Laura had a miscarriage in the middle of all that, like all the stress and everything. I don't know. We said, there's a time we could have no kids this time next year. So that's why we're just grateful.
Yeah.
You know, we're still here. Jude's still here. Baby number two is healthy. Laura's getting scanned every second week, so it's going to be tough, but we wouldn't want it or have it any other way.
No,
you know,
no,
so this is what we're fighting for.
Have you told Jude?
Oh yeah. Oh,
he's not. No, all he's saying is no mammy's baby. No mammy's baby. You know.
Yeah.
He has no interest.
However, he was going to surgery last week and he gets pre-med before he goes, I suppose, to calm down. And there was a baby on the corridor beside the lift and he was straight away staring at the baby and wanted to touch the baby and little eyes, little nose, little mouth. And
that may have been the medication.
Definitely. But like, you know, it did make me laugh. Yeah. There are moments that he does put a smile on my face when he's sick, and you do momentarily forget this is what's happening. He's going for a lumbar puncture, but he was so happy and excited for the baby. But then when you talk about me being pregnant or what's in mommy's belly, no belly.
Just no way, or just a scream.
Yeah, everything is no.
Sounds like a 2-year-old.
Yeah,
that's it.
Somewhat normal.
You said there that if you can get through those weeks, you can get through anything.
Mm-hmm.
Other than absolutely no choice.
Yeah.
Is there anything that helped you get through those weeks?
Hearing from the ward. And...
yeah, well, I actually, a friend of mine, well, we different friend groups years ago, and we and got back in contact with him, and we were in at the start. He texted, he was on the day ward with his little fella, and I called into him, and I just said, oh yeah, Jude has ALL, B cell, and he goes, oh yeah, he'll be grand. And that was it. Just clueless, like, yeah, he'll be grand. I think that was the most reassuring thing I heard. Just calm as you like, he'll be grand, yeah, that's it.
And then I suppose when we were told that it's a 3-year process rather than the 5-year that you thought initially.
Yeah.
You know, that obviously gave us hope as well and some positivity. But I think definitely other parents on the ward, when you meet them and you see their child going through similar, when they're a similar age, like there's one boy that we met, he's 6 months older than Jude, and he's doing very well as far as I know.
It's just good. Yeah.
We don't see them anymore. So that's probably a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one or two little comments. Like I know the doctors and nurses do their best for you, but I was having a really tough morning one time after dropping Jude into surgery. He could have screamed for 3 or 4 hours straight, and I was just sitting outside, and a parent came up and just said, yeah, we were there a couple of weeks ago. She said, but you, in about 5 weeks' time, you had a 2-week break in your slot where he gets no medication. And she said, that is going to be bliss. That is going to be a holiday for you. So you have that to look forward to.
That was the holiday.
That just, like, that comment just picked me up. Got me going again. Because
it really is those connections, isn't it, with people that have done it, been there, seen it, felt it, experienced it. They're so important.
Hard to describe to somebody what actually you feel like.
Yeah, well, I did like hearing the success stories, and I know that the two kids I did schoolwork with when they had leukemia, they're 17, 18 now, and they're both doing great, you know, both doing great. A lot of people would text saying, oh yeah, my cousin or whatever had a child with that, and they're doing great too, and they had it 10 years ago, and you have that, and then you also, but the other side, you scroll through the pages on the charity pages, and you see the candles up, or you're on the ward and you see a child's name donated. And if you see a child's name, you know what it means.
Mm.
When we came in first, we were in room 18, and there was a little girl inside you. She was about 8 or 9.
Yeah. She's unfortunately not with us anymore. So,
I didn't know the family, didn't speak to them, just not in the corridor, but just.
Yeah, just knowing that, like, don't know what's around the corner. She was there and then she was just gone. And, you know, I think everyone is on a different path and everyone's on a different plan. Like, Jude could be on a different plan than somebody who's diagnosed 6 weeks after him. So you just don't know what's next, really.
That was just a reminder, because I think we were going through a good phase, and he was back to himself and he was running around, and then it was just...
we just heard this.
This can still happen. And there was actually... it was a second little girl,
yeah,
as well.
Second little girl, and
you know,
it kind of brought back to reality. And we were very naive at the start, thinking, like, going into the hospital initially, like, we used to pass Crumlin Hospital and be like, oh, that's where the sick babies go, Jude. And you know, never really know what goes on behind those hedges, I guess, and when you drive past Crumlin on the way out of Dublin City.
We always said it. Let's hope. Always said, let's hope we never end up in there. We always said there's people in there right now going through hell. And there are people in there right now, and they'll be the same tomorrow. And
yeah,
every person in there is fighting something.
For a reason.
You just see these broken shells of parents going up and down corridors, you know, up to the theatre room, the ICU, the prenatal, you know, and everyone has some kind of a fight. And you often look and go, I think, who has it worse off? You know, would I rather what I have or what somebody else has? And it's just a
heartbreaking,
a tough place to be.
And then,
tough place to be.
Yeah, and then I suppose even A&E, like, it's so overcrowded at times. Like, when we walk past, just constant streams of people coming in with sick children, and never think that you'll be there, and then your child just suddenly becomes unwell and you're there. That's it. We haven't left since, I guess. So
yeah, we're, I don't know, about what, 100 and...
We're day 127, I think. It could be,
we're right about 100, maybe late, about 150. Yeah. Probably, yeah, we've probably been in there 80 times in the last 150 days, maybe a bit more.
There's one stage, I think it was 21 days out of the last 21, we had been in 18. So I think for 3 weeks, we were in nearly every day with something wrong, some issue with maybe his Freddy line on his chest being, we thought, was infected. And we were just really concerned and very worried at the start because we didn't know everything in the ins and outs, I suppose.
Of course. Look, now, like, we know what we're going through, and people, like, feel sorry for us and all of that. But I look at, I think, compared to what some people are going through when they're, you know, I think our problem might not even scratch the surface of what some people are fighting there. Like, some people live in there.
But then our problem could be a lot worse than somebody on a different ward. Like, we just don't know. Like, you walk past people and you don't know why they're there. And to be honest, when you walk past somebody from St. John's ward, you know straight away that they're from St. John's. And yeah, a lot of parents you would say hello to, even when you're passing by in the cafe in the shop. But
it's just a tough place to be.
Yeah, it's a place that no parent imagines that they will have to be. No. You know, we're so grateful that it exists, and we're, you know, you hear it, and you make sure to donate if anybody's, you know, raising funds for it. And but you don't truly ever believe that your child will need them.
Never think that. I don't know, just the feeling of being just driving past all the many times that we did, and then
that's it. You're just there. In and
it's just our summer.
That's your life. In one day your life is completely changed, and this is your life now. And but we're lucky the fact that we're about 25 minutes from Crumlin. There's people doing what we're doing, and they're coming from
Kerry,
from West Galway and Kerry, and these huge commutes, like, whereas we were in today, Judith, to get Finn Kristen and Doxa Crubin, whatever, I don't even know what they are, but that's...
They're chemotherapies.
Chemotherapies, and we were in and out in about
4 hours?
4 or 5 hours, and, like, that was a piece of cake for us. That was easy. Some people have that with a 7-8 hour commute.
However, next week we could be in, on Tuesday he has surgery. So we could be in for a long day. We don't know. It just depends on how he is after. So last week we had a long day.
Like doing 10 hours on the day ward, you'd say, yeah, that's grand. Where if said that to us 6 months ago,
no
way. Whereas now it's, oh yeah, that's grand.
That's fine.
How has it changed you? Like that example of, like, your perspective on 10 hours on the day ward now seems like, yeah, we can do that. That's fine. That's not a bother. How has it changed your capacity?
A big turning point for me was, I suppose, someone says your child has cancer, you think, well, this mightn't end well, you know, this mightn't end well, and a day could be there and he could be gone. And you have to just appreciate what you have. If it's sitting there on the couch for 10 hours or doing sitting with him, you know, you have to just appreciate it. And things I would have given out about before he was sick. I want to go play golf, want to go hurling training, want to go and do this, but have to sit with him. Whereas now it's like, I'm home from school, whatever it is, sit here and stay in the house till bedtime. And that's no problem at all. That's, yeah, love it.
If he wants to feed ducks at 9 o'clock at night,
yeah,
we'll bring him to
feed ducks. Now. Yeah, in the car, we're going to go feed ducks. No, let's go. Okay. Let's go. I'll carry my shoulders all the way down.
Yeah.
You're tired. Okay, we'll bring you across for, bring you to Dunn's stores, run around the place.
Pick out foods.
Pick out foods, eat what you want. Like, we were really strict in our foods and all that. And I was like,
can't eat chocolate.
He can,
can't eat
he
processed
can eat
food.
Whatever he wants, whenever he wants now, whatever makes him happy.
Down to the point of like nothing frozen, always made everything fresh. No like juices or like, you know, the ready-made meals. I was so strict. I had everything.
He did an unbelievable diet.
Yeah. And now he just eats nothing and he's on the NG tube through his nose.
He didn't eat solid food for about 8 weeks. He fed through his nose 3 times a day. It takes about an hour and a bit.
But like beforehand, if you told me that your child would be on like a nutrient feed that's liquidized, I'd probably panic or think like, oh no, that would never happen. Like Jude would always eat food. Whereas when he was getting those liquidized feeds, my perspective of the whole NG tube is actually not scary. It's such a positive thing for us to have for Jude. Mm. So when he got it in initially, I was really upset because it was very, very visual and he still had hair. So like, it was the first time that I realized my child's sick. And then when he started benefiting from it, that's when I said, do you know what? This is great. I can get medication in here. I can make sure he's hydrated. I can make sure he's fed, that he's been, I suppose, nurtured with food and that he wasn't before. Because for, like I said, maybe half of March, the full month of April and May, he didn't eat. It was kind of the same bland foods, kind of like that beige diet that you might talk about, like crackers, white bread, and then, I don't know, just stopped eating totally. Like the beige diet just kind of fell off and that was it. So the NG tube has brought us great joy and it's not actually as scary as it looks. It's beneficial.
Only for it. But how we've changed.
That's what I don't care about things. I kind of appreciate a lot of the small things.
Appreciate the simple things like I know like this ends and hopefully this ends in two or three years time, but we're making the most of it, of like, we're enjoying life at the moment, you know. Like the best part of our week is going shopping, you know, and thing is, he's happy. If he's happy, like the kick it gives us to see him laughing or just doing something normal.
If he's in bad mood, we're most likely not in 100% form, let's say. Even this morning when he woke up and he had sore legs, that upset both of us, I think. I don't think it was like, oh, he's fine. That's just a side effect. We had to kind of digest it for a few minutes and then actually this is a side effect. We're okay. We're fine. Let's pack up and go and get the chemotherapy. So
I'd imagine it's quite easy for your nervous systems to immediately go into fear mode if he says something like that.
Oh yeah, straight away, because he's limited vocabulary, but within reason he tells you how he feels.
Well, thankfully we've had no emergencies yet, because when we left Crumlin, they give you a list of if your child has these symptoms, and it's pretty much everything: cough, cold, sneeze, high temperature, low temperature, rash, itching. It's everything. If your child has this, bring them back in.
Any kind of temperature that we have had, obviously we've rang them and they've verified it could be okay. Yeah. Most likely he's fine. So
no, we've been looking at, but this morning he was just really upset. It was a side effect of the steroids that caused the pain in his legs. And that's why he stopped walking back in June, because he was on steroids for 36 days.
And then we had the first day he walked. Actually, we were feeding ducks in the canal.
Yeah, that was, he actually walked. That was a bigger moment than his actual first steps.
Mm. Yeah.
Because he was so proud of himself.
So proud. He clapped. He smiled and he was laughing. And fed the ducks, and I think he was, I don't know how to explain it, really, he was,
it's like Jude walking.
He was like himself.
Yeah, he was like
himself again.
Jude walking. Yeah, Jude walking. Yeah, it was a great day.
I've had a lot of episodes with people who are on the other side of this.
Mm-hmm.
Less so those that are in it right now, so freshly in it, like in the context of the people that I've spoken to for you guys to only be in it for 5 or 6 months. Like I can see the exhaustion from carrying this heavy emotion and the concern and the worry and the fear and the hope that it's just about to change for you. As I said, so many people that I've spoken to are telling the story about what happened. Whether it's survivors themselves of childhood cancer or siblings or parents that are talking about it because it happened 4 or 5 years ago. But you're in it. And to have that experience on the podcast is genuinely so important, because it's important to hear where you're at right now. It's important to also see already the little milestones of change in such a short period of time for anybody who has been diagnosed, whose child was diagnosed today or this week or this month, to have some expectation of, yeah, but what happens next week and what happens next month? You know, not just what happened 5 years ago, but really what's going on for me right now. But I also appreciate how difficult it must be for you to come on and to talk about it and to find the words to express how truly awful the last few months must have been for you. So I don't take it lightly that you're here with me tonight and that you have agreed to speak on the podcast, and that you have, in a sense, doesn't, you know, your child is now asleep. This is your time to actually replenish and rejuvenate and get a bit of energy back to go again tomorrow, because it, you know, it never ends. But you didn't. You've brought back the emotion, and you've had to revisit some of the hardest times in the last 5 or 6 months. And that comes with an emotional and an energetic toll that I think sometimes people might not appreciate when you say that you will come on these things. But I do appreciate it. And I know that the people that will listen to it will need it. In the same way that when you said you walked into the room with somebody that you used to know and he said, ah, he'd be fine. Some of the things that you will have said tonight, people will have listened to and have heard, and that will be their version of, ah, yeah, he'd be fine.
You say he'll be fine so flippantly, like, easily, but, you know, every day is hope. And I suppose when I go to bed every evening, I kind of think, well, that's one day down, we're on to the next one, and just have to remain positive, because I suppose it does really affect every mood and every day of your life. Like, it's nonstop, that's all you think about.
It was every bit as tough and as difficult and as horrible as I thought it would be. But I think the start hits you so hard. If you can get through the first, I'd say, 2 months, it does get easier. And I know there's light at the end of the tunnel, but there's no point looking at that, because it's 3 years away and you have to live a life in between that. So your life is in the tunnel, so just get on with it as best you can.
Enjoy everything that you can enjoy as best as possible. Like, it's their first Christmas coming up now, and we're going to enjoy Christmas as best we can.
Yeah.
It's not going to put any sadness on Christmas.
Unless we're in overnight.
Yeah.
Which that'd be a disaster.
Santa will still come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then next Christmas there'll be two.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. And then what is it, 2026, February 2026? Like,
April, I think. Somewhere around there. Like
all going well. He gets to ring the bell. Like I've seen parents do it, and I can't look at it. I have to kind of
walk away, block our ears.
Yes, I have to distance because it's so far away. I can't look at it. And I'm just jealous of them and
happy for them.
Really happy for them. And then of course there's others who never got the chance. You know,
you think of those.
Those families who never got the chance to come in and bring their grandparents in, and they say the little rhyme and they try and pull the bell off the wall, you know, because that's what we're going to do.
Hopefully so.
Yeah.
Hopefully Dobby can come in for that as well.
Bring Dobby in too.
For anything that I've learned from connecting with all of the guests that I've had on this podcast, is that you only have your only certainty really is today anyway. That's all any of us have.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's a good day, allow it yourself to feel it in your bones that it's a good day. And kind of bank them and then use that stored energy for a time when maybe it's not so good. But
yeah. We do, like we sit down every night, we sit down and we scroll back through the pictures of them. Like we've a file saved of a photograph per day, and we put in one picture a day. And we say, like, yeah, that was a good day today. He had good fun, he got to do this and this, and you know, he had a good day.
And you can see from pictures and videos that the energy has changed in him, like from the beginning. You can just see like his facial expressions changed, like his happiness, I suppose, even his vocab, but obviously as he gets older, that's going to develop naturally. But just his change, like if I showed you a picture from July to now,
but you have Laura has a picture. She has a cut side by side of the day before we brought him in, Friday the 9th of June. And it was the day we got the good news on his bone marrow test. And
two different children.
The picture, the more recent one, he has no hair. He has an NG tube in. He's lying on his chest. And he looks healthier, he's happier, smiling, stronger. And the picture from July, June, he's got his thick blonde wavy hair. But he was slouched, pale.
No color. You know?
So like these doctors and nurses and research people, like they're saving him. And I don't know how chemo is made or what it is or what this, I don't know what's in these things, but as it is, like they're saving our baby.
You've mentioned a special little somebody quite a bit in the podcast, and that is your dog. Tell me about how important it has been to have him visit the hospital and still have that connection with Jude.
It was great. He's been in three times. We were on the King's Kennels have a newsletter, and we were on that last week, pictures and a story. But it's just an amazing service, all volunteers. Jude was in late September for four nights, and he had lumbar puncture Tuesday morning, and he had a 24-hour chemo drip of methotrexate on him all night. Like at one stage he had chemo and water in his Hickman line, he had food through his NG tube, he had a bandage on his toe for his oxygen levels, blood pressure, and he had this, and I was all through Wednesday, on the bed all day Wednesday. And then Thursday, we planned to bring Dobby in. And like,
his mood just
this changed. Child like hasn't eaten solid food in weeks, just off a massive dose of chemotherapy, hasn't gotten off bed in 3 days. And we brought him outside, and the pictures do not do it justice. Like that child, for 70 minutes, he ran. in and out and chased the dog and fed him treats and jumped up on the couch. Like, I had the trolley attached to his NG, to his Hickman line.
Has to take it off.
And I was like running in and out. It's about 15 kilos, running in, running out. He was jumping up. Like, he knows it's my job to do that. He doesn't care. He'll do what he wants. But, and I took it off. And it was, the photographs are great, but I'd have to get a video. It was outrageous how a child like that could just
change, become energetic.
He loved it, and the dog loved it. And then we brought him back inside. He sat down with my mother. She sat at him for half an hour, read him a story, and then he slept for 3.5 hours. And then it was time to go home.
Yeah, you said it, you're actually good to go.
And that just did it, took care of our day.
The best day ever in the hospital.
There was no other item or person or activity that could have entertained him like that for 70 minutes. And we're extremely grateful. I know Laura often texts Grania, and I've listened to the Keane's Kennels podcast, and it's just a wonderful service. And I really, really hope it transfers to the new hospital, and
it gets used by many patients,
people use it. You know, that was one of our good days. That was one of our really good days.
One of a few good days. Most of the good days have actually been with Dobby, present, in the hospital. So,
So we're very appreciative of that service.
Evelyn is amazing. Like, the podcast that I did with her, I just sat in complete awe as to how somebody could turn such pain into something that would, for years to come, support so many other families. And the thing that stands out for me the most was when she said, "How has it never been done before? Why has nobody thought of this?" And that is something that stays with me when I think, sure, everything is figured out. It is what it is. You're like, no, there's always room to improve everything we're doing, no matter what it is. If there's something that can be improved to help others, let's figure out how to make it happen. And that, with Keane's Kennels, is just, to me, it's always the thing that stands out. It's the perfect example of that. Just because it has never been done before doesn't mean we shouldn't start now.
Yeah, no, it's, I couldn't say enough about it. Like, he was pale, red eyes, and next thing he just bounced. Dobby.
Treats. Well.
Just unbelievable. The words, I couldn't describe it. I'll have to do a full video next time, because we're in over Christmas. We'll put his coat on. I'm sure he'll do it again.
With
Dobby's Santa coat on.
He's very cute. Even without his Santa coat.
Yeah. He's spoiled. He's bold as well. But,
Thank you for joining me tonight and telling your story and helping anybody else who is in this awful position right now, who needs to connect with other people that are going through it. You do have good days ahead. You will bring that baby, whether he wants it or not, into this world. And he will be promoted to big brother status. But also, he'll have to learn what it is to have a little sibling ruin everything for him for the rest of his days.
Dobby and himself, I think.
Yeah. Big shot for the dog too. Him and the dog are like twins. Yeah. It'd be a big shot for both.
Dobby
of them.
And June have a shot coming along, and they both know, but they'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a tricky late December and January, but I would want nothing else.
I really hope that everything goes well between now and that baby, because
you just need
that little bit of space to feel safe.
Yeah.
To feel like you can, your body can do this, you can do this, your heart can grow for both. All of those things need a little bit of processing. And I really hope that everything is just on schedule and smooth enough to give you that gift of being able to do that. And for you, so that for you, Stephen, so that you don't have to feel like you can't get food poisoning between now and then. And you don't have to carry it all, like that actually you can be soft and have and really enjoy this birth and welcoming this new baby in the midst of all of it. I'm looking forward to hearing that. He's a big brother. And I'm looking forward to hearing that he's on maintenance. And I'm looking forward to hearing that he is ringing that bell.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
On the podcast.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.